you, Americans, and your allies. Armed Forces Radio brings you a special rebroadcast with Victor Young and the orchestra, the Ken Darby Singers, John Nesbitt, and America's beloved baritone, John Charles Thomas.
Hello, dear friends. This is John Charles Thomas. Well, here we are again with another half hour of song, story, and music for you men and women in the armed forces of the United Nations. For story, we have John Nesbitt, one of America's best. For music, there's Victor Young and the orchestra. And for song, the Ken Darby Chorus and myself. And now, Vic, with the preliminaries over, let's get started. For my opener today, I'm going to sing the lovely song by Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein, All the Things You Are.
You are the promised kiss of springtime. That makes the lonely winter seem long. You are the breathless hush of evening that trembles on the brink of a lovely song. You are the angel glow that lights a star. Dearest things I know of you are. Someday my happy arms will hold you, and someday I'll know that moment divine. Again, I've longed for adventure, something to make my heart beat the faster. What did I long for? I never really knew. Finding your love, I found my adventure. Touching your hand, my heart beats the faster. All that I want in all of this world is you.
you remember anything about the musical show Madam Sherry, it was first produced way back in 1910. You'll probably recall two songs from the score that were outstanding. Every Little Movement, for one, and the waltz Victor Young now plays with The Birth of Passion. Peter DeRose, who is known mainly as a composer of popular songs, has written a more serious song, which I'm very fond of. I'd like to sing it for you now. I Heard a Forest Praying.
Night went
There's a very catchy novelty song in the new picture, Meet Me in St. Louis, which Ken Darby has arranged. You will probably be hearing a lot of it. It's called The Trolley Song. And along with it, Sweet Genevieve.
Was pretty in her high-top shoes with her hair piled high upon her head. She went to lose a jolly hour on the trolley, but she lost her heart instead. With his light brown derby and his bright green tie, he was quite the handsomest of men. Well, he looked at her and she looked at him, then they both looked again. Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell. Zing, zing, zing went the hot strings as they started for Huntington Dell. Chunker, chunker, chunker went the motor, 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 motor. Bump, bang, squeak went the brake. Boing, thump, thump, thump went the hot strings as they rattled past Huntington Lake. He tipped his hat and took a seat. He said he hoped he hadn't stepped upon her feet. She dropped her eyes, the blushes came, then he grew bolder.
Going to sing a lovely song written many, many years ago. Louisa Reichardt's In the Time of Roses.
In the time of roses, hope thou wilt. Spring upon discloses for the keenest smart. Though thy grief o'ercome thee through. Summer closes, come long for a voice. Let not death uphold thee, for beyond the tomb, God himself shall fold thee when the roses bloom.
I think that all of us who have been reading in the newspapers about the triplets and quadruplets that have been born all over the world during the past year have also heard the theory that this might be an attempt of nature to overcome the tragic losses of men in the war, and the theory, for example, that always during war more boys are born than girls. Curious and wonderful things do actually happen when death is near. A Vermont farmer of 50 years' experience once told me that when a certain one of his apple trees, which for many years had been producing half a bushel of fruit, suddenly came to a season in which, mysteriously, it was loaded with apples, twice as much, that he always knew then that in a season or two, his tree was going to die. This is as if the tree had some mysterious vegetable brain of its own, and knew that its days were numbered, and so put forth abundant fruit to take its place. Flower sellers use this principle constantly, and they call it forcing. To do this, they take a flowering shrub like an azalea, and they cut off most of its water. They give it no food at all. They raise the heat in the greenhouse to an almost suffocating point. They do about everything that will start to kill that plant. And lo and behold, it now covers itself with blossoms. It pours all its energy into this business of producing its children, and not long after, it usually dies. In one botanical sense, we have terrified the plant into reproducing itself. And by the way, it is a positive fact that today more boys are being born than girls. And it is certain beyond proof that ever since we began to have to devote so much energy to making machines that kill men, there has been an overwhelming increase in the number of discoveries to save men's lives. During any war, the man who must put his brain and hands to the frightful job of killing is a desperate man, but the man who must put his brain and hands to saving life is also a desperate man. On the exact day of May 14th, 1940, when Hitler ordered the bombing of Rotterdam, killing 30,000 civilians in an hour and 40 minutes, two men in England were quietly bending down over a long bench covered with glass saucers of a white jelly. And from the jelly was growing a minute forest of tiny plants, and from that infinitely precious crop, they were taking the chemical composition that burst upon the world shortly after with the name penicillin. Add up every human life that has been lost in combat since the first shot rang out in Poland, and to reach that dread total, you'll have to do your arithmetic in terms of millions, and yet you can do another problem as well. You can estimate the number of human lives during this century that will be saved by penicillin alone. You will find that they total more than all the lives lost on every battlefield of this war put together. Here's another case for you. Malaria is the greatest single killer in the world. Every year, 3 million people burn to death under its attack. Malaria is a giant vampire that prowls every country, particularly the latitude south of 30 degrees, and it feeds on human beings. We had lost the Battle of the Philippines long before the white flag of surrender was raised. For out of every 100 of our boys who capitulated, 85 of them were staggering with malaria. We had run out of quinine. And yet, at the very moment that Corregidor fell, out from 100 distant laboratories, a remarkable substitute for quinine called atrabrine, or atrabrine, was being raced out to allied armies everywhere. And then on May 3rd of this year, it was announced that scientists had, after more than 30 years' search, found an artificial quinine. And when we have conquered malaria, we will have won the most important battle ever fought by man. Even within the sound of the battlefields themselves, fabulous adventures in the preservation of life are now taking place. The tragic homecoming of legless and armless men, which was such a heartbreaking sight after the last war, will be exceedingly rare after the day of victory this time. Gangrene was what caused it, and now only 1 in 100 wounded men suffer from this horrible infection. Blood banks plus the use of sulfur drugs is the whole secret. All this is not to say that war is any good. It is the most frightful of all human inventions. But war is an emergency, and this rouses men to the worst or the greatest in them. And the thing we may not see is that the tremendous emergency welds the whole nation with all its knowledge and skills and crafts into a thinking team. Of course, no one man or single company wants to claim exclusive credit for this. For this is a miraculous thing that takes place in wartime. A mysterious, perhaps divine thing. The releasing of a stream of secrets from the storehouse of time to these men who seek only life, even in the midst of death. War is the dark pathway. No nation ever loses all the scars of that journey. And yet this sinister road is lit forever with the torch of science. And at its close, that same torch can light up a new and beloved world. So that when we find peace at last at that journey's end, we may be able to say as old Dante did when he came out of hell, I saw again the stars.
Thank you, John Nesbitt. A few weeks ago, we announced that Victor Young had commissioned some of the top composers in the motion picture industry to write some special music. They are all to be based on well-known simple melodies. Victor himself led off, and now here is the second of those pieces, a composition by Anthony Collins. It is based on three themes: an old sea chanty, the British Grenadiers, and the sailor's hornpipe. Mr. Collins calls it Down Diddle Down. Thank you. very nice too, Tony Collins. Men of Harlech.
Men of Harlech in the hollow, do you hear like rushing billow, wave on wave that surging follow, battle's distant sound? Is the triumph of Saxon foemen, Saxon spearmen, Saxon bowmen, be they knights or hinds or yeomen, they shall bite the ground. Loose the folds of Thunderdor, flag we conquer under, the placid spine of white on high shall launch its bolt of thunder. Onward, tis our country needs us, he is bravest, he who leads us. On ourself now proudly heads us, freedom, hard and right. Hands of life are riven, blow for blow is given, in deadly luck for battle shock, and mercy shrieks to heaven.
Dear friends, we have sung our last song until our next visit with you 1 week from now. Speaking for Vic and Ken and the boys, I say we have enjoyed being with you. And so until next week at this same time, this is John Charles Thomas saying goodbye and God bless.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.